This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. When my guest Jessie Klein won an Emmy for her role as head writer of the Comedy Central series Inside Amy Schumer, it was just 3 months after she'd given birth. As the ceremony was ending, instead of heading right to the party with her friends and colleagues, she had to go to a dressing room set aside for her where she could pump. That entailed figuring out how to unzip her fancy dress by herself and put on her nursing bra. The Emmy didn't negate that she was still exhausted, uncomfortable in her post-childbirth body, and about to return to the daily struggles of her new life. She told that story in her 2016 book of personal essays. Her new book picks up the story from there and is all about the anxieties, the joys, and hard work of being a new mother, and the difficulty of figuring out who her new unrecognizable self was. When the book concludes, she's in her mid-40s, and her son Asher is approaching his 5th birthday. The essays are funny serious, or serious funny. The book is called I'll Show Myself Out, Essays on Midlife and Motherhood. Jessie Klein is now the showrunner and an executive producer of the new Showtime comedy series I Love That For You, about a group of people working at a home shopping network. It stars SNL alums Vanessa Bayer and Molly Shannon. Jessie Klein is also an actor on the Netflix animated series Big Mouth and has also written for the series Dead to Me, Transparent, and Saturday Night Live. Jessie Klein, welcome to Fresh Air. I enjoyed the book so much. Thank you for returning to our show.
Oh my gosh, thank you so much for having me.
I'd like you to start with a reading. And this is one of the serious parts. and this is in a chapter where you're thinking about what is a hero. You know, the classic definition of a hero is like a guy, and it's always a man, who sets out on this perilous journey to right some wrong or fight some battle, and after facing danger after danger, returns home to his wife or mother or daughter or whoever. But all the women have stayed home, and the man has become the hero. And you're trying to, like, rewrite that narrative in your mind so that mothers are heroes, so that you as a mother can see yourself as a hero. And this is part of that thought process.
Every mother you know is in this fight with herself. The sword that hangs over you is a sword of exhaustion, of frustration, of patience run dry, of her bladder practically exploding like a water balloon as she enters her third hour of sitting in a chair trying to get you to sleep. It's the sort of missing a meal because there wasn't time to eat while she was packing a diaper bag with the endless amount of stuff you needed to go to the park. The sort of sneaking one bite of string cheese while sitting on the edge of a damp sandbox. The sort of indignation at how little she feels like a human when she so often has to look and behave like an animal. And mostly, and this is the spikiest truth, it is the sort of rage. The rage and shock of how completely she must annihilate herself to keep her child alive. Ultimately, the hope of impossible delight almost always wins out over the impossible torment. I know this because here I am alive writing this, and here you are alive reading it, which means our mothers did what heroes do. They kept us all alive to tell our own tales one day. And what I can tell you is that so much of the heroism of motherhood is the ability to swallow the sword, to swallow the pain and frustration, and keep everything inside.
I want to pick up on a line from that reading about how completely you have to annihilate yourself to keep your child alive. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. I guess that was one of the most shocking aspects for me of what I experienced becoming a mother, that I people always tell you there's no way to know exactly what being a parent will be like. And that's definitely true, but you kind of feel like, oh, well, I have an idea. And then I really didn't. And I just think, all of your kind of former identity and the things you just do on a daily or minute-to-minute basis, the clothes you wear, the way you think of yourself, it just all kind of has to explode away because the baby slash child is just, it's so all-encompassing. And people say that all the time, but you don't really, there's just kind of no way to comprehend how completely your old identity kind of vanishes, I guess. Or at least that was my experience of it.
Did you have a period during early motherhood when you were trying to adjust to your new life and your new self and your new body? Were you having second thoughts about becoming a mother?
Well, this is one of those moments, Terry, where it's kind of the crux of like what was hard about writing this book is that it feels like so terrifying to answer that question. Yes. It feels like one of the biggest cultural taboos is to say that you've had a second thought about being a mother, or honestly, even to just really to talk about the hard stuff. But I can't speak for all moms. I can only speak for myself, but I also feel like I could speak for a lot of my friends maybe. But yeah, of course there are those moments where you're like, I can't believe I've gotten myself into this. And of course I, you know, love my son beyond anything. He's the thing I love most in the world. And I did feel that way from the beginning. And I also felt all these other things. And I think it's that and that our culture and our society just doesn't want to accept that both of these feelings can live side by side.
Yeah. Yeah. We don't like contradictions very much.
No, we really love a black and a white. We don't love a gray.
So let's rewind the clock a little bit. And this might sound like, you know, an obvious question that gets an obvious answer. But why did you want to become a mother? Because not everybody does.
No, not everybody does. And nor should everyone. I will say I'm really like one of those people that just is really to each their own. I remember many years ago, I was in a writer's room. This was long before I had kids. I was, I guess, in my maybe early 30s. And someone said to me, well, you know, you just have to have kids because, I mean, it makes me laugh now, but I was like, ugh. He said, you just have to have kids because if you don't, you don't really know what love is until you have kids. And I now have a kid, and I'm like, no, I don't agree with that. I think I knew what love was. I got it. I mean, I've been loved. I love people. I'm loved by somebody, you know, lucky enough to be loved by a few others, different capacities, daughter, friend, you know, at the time, girlfriend, whatever. Anyway, so yeah, I've now been around the barn on it, and I can say I don't agree with that. But in terms of, so yeah, why did I become a mother, Terry? I don't know. I mean, I think there was a huge part of me that that wanted to, especially I after I got married, my husband very much wanted to have a kid, and I was still very, I would say, a little bit ambivalent about it. I definitely knew that I had never been a very maternal person. I love that you thought this would be an obvious answer. So I talked for 7 hours. But I'd never been a very maternal person. There was a part of me that thought I wouldn't have kids. And then after I got married, I ended up kind of doing a couple of tests that I can't remember the name of anymore, just to check my sort of fertility status. Because I was like, you know, having a bit of a career moment. And I was like, if I do become a mom, I'm going to leave it till the last possible moment I can leave it, which I kind of thought in today's world, I was like, maybe when I'm 50 or something, or for some later. And then the test revealed that I was actually had like half an egg left, and it wasn't going to be easy, and I needed to go through all this fertility stuff. And then as soon as I found out that I might not be able to have a child, I really went into a spiral about it, and was just, I just wanted to have one.
You said something like, before I had kids, you have one child in this book. Do you have another child?
No. I have absolutely not. Okay. No. I mean, I was just saying kids and sort of, you know, before you have kids, before one has kids. I have kid. I love my kid. I will not be having another kid.
I thought maybe I missed something really important.
No. You've gotten it exactly perfect all the way through. I have one kid. He's going to have to learn to make friends.
I want you to describe the feeling of your body having been broken from, you know, from the act of giving birth and feeling like this should be such a joyous and fulfilling moment for you, but you felt like you were living in a damaged body.
Yeah, I mean, and I will say I was lucky on a variety of fronts, you know, the privilege of good health care and all of that stuff, and had an amazing doctor, and I chose to deliver at a hospital, which was excellent. Shout out to Lenox Hill, in New York City. But and I didn't have an especially difficult labor, you know, relatively speaking. I think, like I say in the book somewhere, it's like it was uneventful, which is like the best thing you can say about a labor. But, you know, that doesn't mean it wasn't still pushing a human out of my vagina. And, you know, it's a very intense recovery, even under, like I said, for me, pretty kind of decent circumstances. Some people really do have, you know, come out of it quite injured in terms of tearing and other kinds of complications that can go wrong. But I mean, the minimum is that your body is freaking out, you know, as your hormones kind of overnight turn upside down. You don't have a person in your body anymore. They're now on the outside. Your breasts are insanely swollen. You're trying to figure out how to breastfeed. I remember a moment when I looked down at my stomach right after, like, you know, within an hour after giving birth. And I just remember, I was like, what is this? Like, this is not a real thing. I don't know what it was. I remember it was the words that came into my mind. I looked at my skin and it's this crazy texture. It looked like basketball skin, like sort of puckered and like a basketball. And then you just are bleeding for so long and you can't go to the bathroom and you're in pain and you're bleeding. And that's for many weeks. And again, that wasn't a particularly difficult birth.
Among other things, I mean, you gained 50 pounds while you were pregnant, and then you had trouble losing it.
Sure did.
You literally didn't recognize yourself in the mirror. What was that feeling like, of physically feeling like you are a different person and you want to be the person who you were before?
You know, it's a mix of feelings. I think on the one hand, you want to sort of be body pause and accept it and like, this is gorgeous. And I, you know, the amazing thing my body did. But, you know, of course, we've lived for me at the time. I was almost 40 when I gave birth. So I've lived 39 years living in America, knowing what I'm supposed to look like to be acceptable, and, you know, postpartum body wasn't it, and it's hard. Yeah, I've never looked the same. I'm very lucky to be healthy, and I exercise, but a person grew inside of me, and I just don't have the same body anymore. It's like a real shift that I think, you know, I think about it every day.
Was there anything that felt really good to let go of that you no longer had to do because you were so busy being a mother?
I mean, I think every parent will tell you, like, you know, one of the best things about it is it's just like the excuse that never gets tired. If you want to get out of something, you're just like, oh, the baby. And you just, it's like you never have to go to a party you don't want to go to again. You get a full pass. And those excuses are generally pretty valid. So that's a nice thing. I think one of the things I really cherish about becoming a mother is that you're so busy. You're keeping a person alive, and it does give you this kind of, I'll call it no F's left to give vibe about your life. And a lot of that vanity, a lot of kind of also trying to make nice with other people in certain ways, like having to apologize for things, you just kind of stop doing that. And that feels in some ways like a superpower.
Yeah, what were the kinds of things you stopped apologizing for?
I think just anytime you need to ask for something, I just think as women, you know, we're so used to sort of saying I'm sorry in this very reflexive way, almost as like just an opening gambit to any sentence that you say, like, I'm sorry, can I, you know, you just, we actually on Inside Amy Schumer had done a sketch about...
I remember that sketch. I love that sketch.
It's a great
sketch. It's several women sitting around together. Everything they say starts with, I'm sorry.
It's like a group of like incredibly impressive scientists and researchers at a conference, and they still all say, I'm sorry, just endlessly. And I think Amy's sister Kim, I believe, wrote that sketch. Anyway, and it really changed my life in general. But definitely once becoming a mother, you just, I think there's just a sense of urgency, and both urgency and power, where just like those little things, just throughout the day, I don't want to have to apologize for like moving through the world as I am just trying to get my baby from morning to night, like unscathed and safe.
Now that your son is six,
yes,
and you've been a mother for several years, how do you feel about your body and your life? Do they still seem unrecognizable in a scary way to you?
I would say in some ways they do still feel unrecognizable. I think the body of it all, you know, has fallen into a little bit of like it's static. I think just again in the world of like how I think women mostly think about anybody. I think women without kids who haven't given birth hear a certain amount of static about their body in their heads all the time. And so I think I'm in static land where sometimes I feel okay about it. Other times, you know, like I feel like I've purged my entire closet twice. We're just realizing like just certain things look so small. You're like, how did I ever, there was something I reached into the back of my closet to give away the other day where I just was like, God, that was a really different human being who wore that dress, whatever, 12 years ago. And in terms of recognizing my life, there are still just really specific moments having a child where the surrealness of it will still just like strike me like a little lightning bolt sometimes. There was a moment, I wrote a chapter about potty training my son, and there was a moment, which was a really hard process for us, and there was a moment where we just ended up in this like incredible, I call it like a bad one-act play, where we're sitting, he and I were on the floor of a handicapped stall at a Starbucks bathroom. And I just was like, what is this life? What am I? I'm like, me and this little boy are screaming at each other in a public restroom at a coffee shop. What? I don't understand this at all.
Is there anything else you want to add about things that you find unrecognizable about your life now as a mother, even though it's been 6 or 7 years that you've been a mom?
There are little things every day. There is actually, because just as he grows up and gets older, his interests are really funny. And he's recently decided that he's a Yankees fan. I guess somehow, maybe like a friend at school, he knows that at Yankees games, they play that song Cotton Eye Joe. Like during breaks between innings. It's like if you're familiar with how they do this at Yankee Stadium, it's really such an irritating song. It's like, Cotton Eye Joe, like it goes like that. And now he wants me to play it in the car all the time. And we were driving home from the park the other day, and I tried to put on just like the Beatles or just something to expose him to like better music. He's like, Mom, can we hear Cotton Eye Joe again? And it has to be that kind of remix, terrible Yankee Stadium remix of Cotton Eye Joe. And that is a song that I'm just listening to. If people at home know, it's the worst version of that song. It's like a techno version of Cotton Eye Joe. And when I'm driving a Prius around with this kid and that song blasting, those are moments where I'm like, I do not recognize this life.
One of the things you write about in the book is the kind of tensions in a marriage that a new baby can create. Did that happen in your marriage?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think it's extremely common. I think like there's an old, like the saying that like, when a new baby is born, it's like a bomb goes off in your house and in your marriage, because it is, the baseline thing that's going on is no one's sleeping, you know, and that is like one of the primary forms of like military torture that exists is like sleep deprivation. No one is at their best just because you are so tired. And so I feel like that's kind of honestly the baseline is like anything, like just in a normal sort of pre-baby life, like a lot of things, you're just, when you're awake, you're much more pleasant. And like, I remember when we had to sleep train him, like you have to sleep train a baby when they're like around 4 months old, where they have to learn to be in their crib. And that's something where I fully lost my mind. I mean, I just couldn't do it. I couldn't hear him crying. And I was sort of the mind to be like, well, I'll just Velcro myself just with a 4-month-old baby. I just could not like let him cry it out. And my husband was like, we've got to do it this way. And he was very regimented about sort of following a plan and doing a process. And a lot of people had told me, like, when you sleep train, like, the mom has to kind of just get kicked out. Like, because, I mean, I literally went up to the roof one night. Like, we just were almost in, like, almost not, we weren't in a physical altercation, but it was as close as we've ever come. Or I think I just also, we were so tired, and I was like, I was trying to go in the baby's room, and he was like, you will not go in that room. I think I really became like a bad TV scene of me being like, do not block me from my baby. And he's like, you're losing your mind. And I think I ultimately did just like pour a glass of wine and go up to like our roof and just chilled out while he sweated it out. And I was very grateful because it totally worked. And he taught the baby how to sleep.
Did you have a pet together, which a lot of people think of as a starter child?
No. We didn't have a pet. I mean, I have, when I was a child, I had a guinea pig named Chumley. May his memory be a blessing. I was very attached to, but I would certainly not describe the love and care that Chumley required as anywhere near a baby. No, but we weren't even that prepared. Yeah, we didn't have a dog. We didn't have a cat. This was all completely new.
Your son has, or at least he had, trouble adapting to change, and you were moving to a new home, and you were really worried about your son adapting. So you had asked his teacher, what could you do to prepare him for it? And she suggested, write a little book.
Yeah.
Like a very short, very simple little book. Tell us about the book that you wrote to prepare him for this big change.
Yes, this was an indispensable tool, and I highly recommend it for anyone else with little kids. Yes, our preschool director was like one of the best things for when you have to help a child go through any kind of transition or event coming up, is to just write a little book that just basically, I mean, I, as a writer, I was like, I remember I sent her first draft of my little book, and it was still like four typed pages. And she was like, you're an idiot. She's like, no, it's like 5 sentences. And it basically is, here's what's going to happen, you know, which for this moment was like, we are going to move into a new house. Here's what will be the same, and here's what will be different. That's like a key part, is like, what's the same and what's different. What's different is the house itself. And what is the same is that, you know, you will live there and I will live there and dad will live there and your nanny will be there. And, you know, we'll still do these, you know, we'll still play and we'll still be together and you'll have your toys. And that's it. And it was like this magical thing where I just realized, like, I could read him these little books that I would make, and it just seemed to work to get him to be like, to understand that this thing was going to happen, that there was still something familiar to glom onto from the prior life, and that it would be okay.
We've talked about the difficulties of being the mother of an infant and a young child. But what do you love about being a mother? And things that really surprise you about how much you love part of being a mother?
I mean, I do really, my son is such a funny, sweet, just endlessly surprising, smart boy. And I do feel so lucky, like, to be his mom. And one of the things that I really do love is like the things that he does that make me laugh. And we're especially now at six, like, you really get into kids say the darndest things territory. Like the other day, he was not brushing his teeth well enough. And I was like, you got to brush your teeth or you're going to have cavities. And he was like, well, what happens if I get a cavity? And I was like, well, it's not great. You know, you gotta get it filled. And then I realized, like, oh, I don't want to over scare him about cavities, because at some point he might have a cavity. So I realized I need to dial it down. And I was like, well, but if you do get a cavity, I was like, it's not the biggest deal. And then he just looks at me and he goes, what is the biggest deal? I go, what do you mean? And he goes, what's the biggest deal in the world? I was like, and thank God I was like, God, what is the biggest deal in the world? It's just these questions. I never thought of what the biggest deal in the world is. And then I really was like, oh God, I got to come up with an answer. And then he, thank God, filled in and he just went, is it getting a pet? Is getting a pet the biggest deal in the world? And I said, yeah, I think it is. It's definitely one of the biggest, is getting a pet.
I want to talk with you about your new show on Showtime. And you're the showrunner and executive producer. It's called I Love That For You. And it's set in part at a cable home shopping network called SVN, which stands for Special Value Network. It stars Vanessa Bayer, who co-created the show. And it's based in part on her having had in real life leukemia as a child. So the character she plays had leukemia as a child and kind of never quite regained her confidence after that and her ability to take risks. But what she really wants to do is to become like a host on a home shopping network, because that's part of what got her through the hospitalizations and the recovery and the chemo and all of that. And she finally auditions for the job and she gets it. But she's really bad at it. And she gets fired by her. She's called into the office. She gets fired by her boss. And the boss says to her, you have to tell us who you are. You have to tell us what you're selling us about yourself, what you're selling the audience about yourself. And so the Vanessa Bayer character thinks about it and blurts out something that is no longer true, but it's the only thing she can think of. And here's the scene.
You know I'm calling them everything.
I have cancer! Oh my God, what?
That's right. I had it when I was a kid, and she back. Oh, I just found out recently, and I didn't want to tell you all because I didn't want to burden you. So, sorry, I messed up last night. But I guess I've got a couple of two, three things on my mind. All right? Patricia, you wanted to know my story. You wanted to know what I'm selling you. What's my deal? Well, I have an answer for you. I'm a survivor. And I know that obstacles just make us stronger. They make us better. They make us appreciate the little things, the details.
Keep talking.
Like this beautiful cross-stitch hem and this bow, which I feel like it almost has like a 50s quality to it. And you know, as someone who's battling cancer, I'm telling you, we're all going through something and we all deserve a garment that says, here I am. And not only am I going to be okay, I'm going to be fabulous.
So that's Vanessa Bayer in a scene from the new Showtime comedy series. I love that for you. And my guest, Jesse Klein, is the showrunner and an executive producer. This is a very enjoyable series. Did you watch a lot of home shopping shows while making this show?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's funny because my primary connection to home shopping growing up was that my grandmother, may her memory also be a blessing along with my guinea pigs, my grandmother was very into home shopping. A lot of the gifts that she would buy me were like little pieces of jewelry from home shopping that, I would question now the actual value of things that were presented as gold and had gemstones. It was the thought that counted, and I loved them. But anyway, I had seen it, and I would watch it with her, and I was like, yeah, I know it's kind of like a kooky environment, and the hosts are kind of like a little over the top, but I hadn't seen it in a long time. And then when I was working on this show, I started watching it again, and it's truly so much crazier than I remembered. I mean, it's really wild to watch it. It's very funny.
What is wild about it?
Well, I think what it is, you know, they are doing it live. It's on 24 hours a day, basically, and it's all over the world. And these hosts are... the volume of things that they're selling is so high, and the amount of time they have to be talking and kind of just endlessly, dare I say, yapping about this stuff without a break is so intense that inevitably they start to kind of reveal things about their lives and who they are kind of by accident. And those are the moments that are very, very funny. Like there's a clip that we watched over and over again that I think it was Isaac Mizrahi from a while ago selling something on there, and somehow they get him and this other host get into a conversation about whether the about whether the moon is a planet. And they just, like, one, I can't remember which one of them, but one of them is like, yes, the moon is absolutely a planet, honey. And you're like, oh my God, what are you talking about? And that happens like 1,000 times a day. Not about the moon specifically, but just people have their tells. It's hard to talk. I'm sure you're aware of this. It's hard to talk for like 9 hours a day and not slip up with something that is revealing something that maybe you wouldn't want to have revealed.
Well, I think we should end with Beyonce.
Yeah, let's take it to Beyonce.
A song of hers that you played over and over for a time. Well, tell us about the song that you loved, especially.
Oh, yes. I got very obsessed with... like everyone else is very obsessed with the entire Lemonade album. And then I was specifically obsessed with the song Hold Up, which I conservatively would say I listened to 2 billion times.
What was it about the song? I mean, the song is about jealousy.
I think it taps into a little bit of craziness that even like spills over beyond being about the jealousy. At the moment that album came out, I was really in like the full throes of like toddler land, or I guess even a little younger. And I think there was like a constant feeling of like rage, like just always feeling a bit thwarted in life in general and exhausted and definitely bickering with the husband and kind of horny and not like connecting and just drive. But like, I remember driving around in my, I do have a walnut brown Prius, which is not a popular color for a Prius, but, and just like feeling that like just bursting kind of shock and rage at like the circumstances that I was emotionally in. And there was something about that song that just, I would blast it from my window all the time. And it was just really cathartic.
I think we can all agree it's a lot better than Cotton Eye Joe.
I mean, I would say you could almost call them opposites.
Jesse Klein, thank you so much for talking with us. It's really just been a pleasure.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Jesse Klein's new book is called I'll Show Myself Out, Essays on Midlife and Motherhood.